Right on the heels of the successful SpaceX launch last week, Jacksonville's Cecil Spaceport says it's blasting off next. Good Wednesday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live on the radio at 9. Also, never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or through the WJCT app. And just ahead, big news out of Cecil Airport. They say they're going to launch private commercial space launches later this year. Would you want to take a rocket into space someday? Get on the line now with your questions and comments about the future of commercial space travel from right here in town. 549-2937. Then later, today's Going Green spotlights the GTM Reserve, plus a special treat. Don't miss it as JU sports legend and basketball Hall of Famer Artis Gilmore joins us to talk about a new film chronicling the Dolphins' incredible Cinderella story, 1970 run to the NCAA championship game. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, it was an amazing sight to behold last week as Elon Musk's rocket-heavy SpaceX test flight perfectly launched off a pad down at Cape Canaveral, the next step in commercial private space flight. Guess what? Another announcement this week here from our corner of Florida. After a few delays, flights out of Cecil Spaceport are expected to begin before the end of the year. Yeah. Now, back in 2010, the Federal Aviation Administration approved Jacksonville's Cecil Field as a spaceport. It is the only licensed horizontal launch spaceport anywhere on the East Coast. In horizontal flight, small rockets are attached to jets and then launched from over the ocean. So what does this announcement mean for our spaceport? What can we expect? Lots of questions. Todd Lindner is director of Cecil Spaceport and joins us now in studio to take your calls. Todd, good morning and very exciting news. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having us.
What are your questions for Todd Lindner, director of Cecil Spaceport, as Cecil announces they will have a commercial space launch from Jacksonville later this year? 549-2937 to join the show. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. So the whole world was just amazed by the SpaceX launch just last week. And right on the heels of that, you're out with this big announcement. What's going to be happening at Cecil?
Well, first and foremost, I'd like to also say a big congratulations to Elon Musk and the folks at SpaceX. They work very hard, and they've paved the way for others to conduct those kind of launches as well. So big congratulations to them for the Falcon Heavy launch. As it relates to Cecil, yes, we've been working on this for many years and have finally gotten to a point in working with a couple different operators in which we will be conducting our first commercial launch. We've conducted, we've done some space, some test launches out there previously. So this will be the first commercial launch. And actually, it will go the schedule right now. If things go as planned, and like we said, typically they do not, the launch could go as early as the end of this year. It's probably more probable. The launch will probably occur in the first quarter of 2019.
Okay. There are only 12 commercial spaceports in the United States. Cecil is one of them. You are one of only six that can facilitate what's known as a horizontal launch, where a small rocket flies out over the ocean and launches from there. Is that what you're envisioning for this first launch?
Yeah, the first launch will be a launch which will involve a vehicle that will be carrying a rocket that has been retrofitted to the base of the vehicle, and it will be launched out over the Atlantic, from the Atlantic. But as it relates to horizontal launch operations in general, that can be a vehicle that takes off under turbojet power and then ignites a rocket engine at a predetermined location and altitude. It can be a vehicle that is very similar to any other aircraft that takes off under rocket power and is under rocket power the entire time. So horizontal launch operations is a very diverse category at this time.
What are the long-term plans for Cecil Spaceport? What's your long-term vision as you strategize about the future viability of commercial space travel. This is something that's so exciting for millions of people all over the world, and they want to get a clearer picture of what the future is going to look like when we look at this new frontier of travel. It's incredible to think about.
Well, being the fact, first of all, you know, we have a board and a leadership within the organization that has the forethought and the vision, as you put it, to see the need for this, and very appreciative of that. And as we move forward, more than anything, we want to provide an economic driver for the community of Jacksonville, which can be a big asset to the community. As it relates to the operations itself, these vehicles in appearance look very similar to the aircraft that are out flying today. The primary difference is the way in which they're being propelled. Eventually, there will be facilities to accommodate all the different forms of horizontal launch operations, whether it be a vehicle, whether it be a rocket that's carrying a payload that's going to the International Space Station. Be that as it may, we will be developing to accommodate all of those.
Elon Musk's payload, the SpaceX launch, carried with it a Tesla into space. What is this Cecil payload going to send into space?
The first payload, it will not be a Tesla.
Not be a Tesla, okay.
No, actually, it will probably be a satellite. This will probably be a government payload. And that's really all that I can talk about as it relates to that.
Everything else somewhat classified, or can you share a little bit more about what the goal of this launch is? Is it to install a satellite into space?
It is to place a satellite into orbit.
Into orbit, and a government satellite.
It will be a government satellite, yes.
Long term, do you envision average people with means coming to Cecil just because they want to go into space?
The areas or one of the markets which we are targeting is the space tourism, human space flight market that among all the other markets has its place. It is rather lucrative and expensive to do that. But for those of us who have lived our entire life and always wanted to fly in space, this is going to be the opportunity to do that.
Are you one of those people?
I would be one of those people, yes.
You want to go into space before you die?
I would, yes.
Yes.
Very much so.
So what would that look like for someone? Let's say the cost curve bends down somewhat, although I'm sure it will still be incredibly expensive. How will you book a flight? How will this work?
Well, initially, and to your point, it has come down significantly. When this all started, the folks at Virgin Galactic, I think the initial cost was about $250,000 to $260,000 per person. That cost is now down to about $125,000 to $130,000 a person.
Only $135,000, yeah.
And we continue to see that price, and that price will continue to come down. The big difference between flying on a commercial space vehicle as opposed to flying on an air carrier aircraft. Today, anyhow, it would be the fact you'll need to show up probably a week in advance, go through some microgravity training, have some medical analysis conducted, to confirm that you are able to fly in space physically, and then conduct the operation.
Sign a couple waivers. I would think as well. Will they give you a coupon since you run the whole place? I'm hoping you would not have to pay $135,000.
I've requested a non-revenue ticket.
Yeah. Let's go to your cause now. As exciting news comes out of Cecil Spaceport, they are launching their own commercial launch later this year, hot on the heels of the successful space launch just last week down at Cape Canaveral. More questions to ask, but let's get a few of you on the air at 549-2937. Izzy on the south side. Hi, Izzy. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I have a comment and a question. First of all, my comment is you guys have done a great job over there at Cecil Field, and adding this new space component to it is just another feather on the cap for the Jacksonville Aviation Authority in Utah. You guys have done a great job. My question is, what's been your biggest challenge in trying to coordinate these, I guess you've got to coordinate with the FAA, the military, the Department of Transportation. I mean, what's been your biggest challenge in trying to get this thing going?
Yeah, thank you, Izzy. My question, too, because you had initially wanted to do this in 2016, right, Todd?
That's correct. And thank you for the comments, Izzy. The biggest challenge that we've encountered more than anything, and first of all, I will say this kind of shows how naive I was. I've been flying since I was a teenager, and always, you know, when I thought about the Federal Aviation Administration, I thought of that as one entity. However, you have FAA air traffic, you have FAA airports, you have FAA commercial space, you have FAA flight standards district office, all of these different entities, and they all have to be brought together and collaborated in the same breath at the same time, and they all have to be on the same page. So the biggest challenge that we've had is working with all those entities, bringing them together, and probably the biggest natural resource that we have that folks in the aviation business and aerospace business tend to overlook is airspace. And the airspace, you know, is something that we have to always be cognizant of and know that we have the military using airspace, you have commercial air carriers using airspace, and how that commercial space fits into that is always, you know, very, very challenging.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that. How do you see commercial values and the profit motive and the market forces propelling space travel forward, as opposed to the government for decades was running this? Now we're seeing commercial actors coming in, and those that are in favor of this say this is saving this sector and this is pushing it forward. Do you agree with that? And how do you see the business values of this affecting this entire discussion?
First of all, I definitely agree with that. And if we look back into the aviation industry, and we see the trail that the aviation industry blazed as we started out with the Wright brothers and evolved from the Wright brothers to the mail being carried by the government, and then things getting turned over to the private sector. The commercial space industry has taken a very similar path in that originally, you know, the space industry was oversaw and operated through the government, and now is being turned over to the commercial entity. But as we go forward, one of the things we're finding is all the different applications for space, and one of the more important ones that we need to deal with right now is the medical research field.
How so?
The folks actually right here at Mayo, here in Jacksonville, one of the things that they're working with is the development or the creation or development of stem cells in a microgravity setting, and the fact that I think there's a hypothesis that stem cells will recreate and regenerate much quicker at in a microgravity setting.
So Mayo is coordinating with you at CSL on this research, or more generally working on this?
They're working on this more generally. We've had conversations with them, but they're making great advancements.
Fascinating. That's incredible to look at as well. Kyle is in San Marco. Hello, Kyle. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I just had a question about what you might think the economic impact might be on the area out there.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's certainly a big piece of this as well. Out on the far west side, CSL's a big facility, lots of acreage out there, not in a heavily developed area. So when you look at the economic development piece, what are the board members, the people driving this, what are you envisioning there?
Well, the economic impact as it relates to specific numbers, with such little history to go on to determine the specific economic impact. We are just now in the middle of doing an economic impact analysis to determine that. From a more broader sense, the aerospace industry, space industry in particular, the economic impact statewide is billions and billions of dollars. And Space Florida just recently completed an economic analysis of that.
So still hard to get a firm grasp on, but definitely potential.
Well, and it's more than potential. You know, the fact that, you know, our mission, the Jacksonville Aviation Authority, a big part of our mission is to be an economic driver for the community and be a facility, provide facilities and provide jobs that will in the end, you know, really serve as a significant asset to this, to the Northeast Florida community.
If you're just tuning in right now, we're speaking with Todd Lindner. He's the director of Cecil Spaceport. Right after the SpaceX launch last week at Cape Canaveral, Cecil says they will have their first commercial space launch from here in Jacksonville, either late this year or early 2019. 549-2937 as we talk space on the show right now. David is in Bartram Springs. Hey, David, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
All right, thanks.
Hey, my question is, how high in space do the space tourism routes go, and where is that in relation to other man-made objects in space, space like satellites? Like, how far is that distance?
Yeah, that's a great question. People want to know, yeah, if I get on one of these rockets eventually, where am I going? Yeah,
high, really high. the typical operation model is the vehicle takes off horizontally, climb to an altitude of approximately 45 to 50,000 feet, and either the vehicle will release either another vehicle or will ignite a rocket engine, and they will climb vertically to approximately 360,000 feet in space and experience, you know, a certain amount of time of weightlessness. I think it's about 20 minutes of weightlessness before you'll start back down. That is still significantly lower than the orbits that satellites are traversing today.
How long will passengers be in the vehicle? How long will they be in space?
It's about and I can't speak to this purely because we're not an operator, but in the operators that we've worked with, what I'm gathering is about a 45 minute trip. Going up is much faster than the coming down. One thing you got to keep in mind is these vehicles come down from such a high altitude, and based on the composites they're built out of, they have to be able to get rid of as much energy as they possibly can without causing any damage to the vehicle itself.
Will it splash down into the ocean?
No, they will land horizontally.
They'll land horizontally at Cecil.
That's right.
Okay. Chris is near JIA right now. Hey, Chris, what are your questions? What are your comments?
Well, good morning. I work in the aviation industry and was just curious as to whether there are employment opportunities going to be coming available with this venture. And I can take my the reply off here.
Okay. People want jobs. Sure.
The short answer to Chris's question is yes. There'll be opportunities for people that work in the airframe, power plant industry, avionics. The latest market that we'll be touching probably also be payload preparation, payload integration, which is along the same lines of doing airworthiness and power plant work.
Now, you mentioned the payload will be a government satellite. There are only 12 commercial spaceports in the U.S., of which Cecil is one. Is there a space race going on among these commercial spaceports right now? Is there friendly competition to get up into space and to get stuff up there? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, and there, like you said, Melissa, there are 12 commercial spaceports or 6 that will provide horizontal launch services, and we 6 work very close together, and we share information back and forth. And we're all trying to help the other develop. Some of the spaceports are for the purposes of primarily of doing testing and research. Other spaceports are purely for the commercial activities. On the side, we're always competing against each other.
You want to be first. If you get up as soon as you can, viably and safely.
Definitely.
Now, Elon Musk has stated that his whole rationale for the SpaceX launch is that he believes we will need to exit the planet at a certain point, and that we will need to install a human colony on Mars, that we are going to degrade planet Earth to such a point that eventually space travel to other worlds will be necessary. How do you see that aspect of this commercial push towards space travel?
From our perspective, that's just another piece of the whether Mr. Musk is right or wrong is kind of irrelevant. What it does, though, it propels people to try to do better and do more and develop the industry, and that's the important part of that.
So would you envision, whether or not his vision proves out, do you envision a world, a future where we have a colony on Mars, where we are regularly sending trips back and forth to, say, Mars or other planets?
I can see that occurring, not necessarily in my lifetime, but I think that will occur. I mean, I think the president has made it very clear that we definitely want to get back to the moon. And I think that's probably one of the first steps in getting us a facility established so we can go from there to get to Mars.
All right, let's go to CJ in San Marco now. Hey, CJ, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey. Good morning. Just asking your guests, who is the actual operator? I know that Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic operates the horizontal space. I'm not sure if you're ready to let us know who participating in this venture.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that.
One of the companies we're working with predominantly right now is a company called Generation Orbit. They're a horizontal launch provider, actually, that are based out of their home offices in Atlanta. To the point, Virgin Galactic, we're working with them as well. One thing that has recently occurred with the folks at Virgin is they've split into two companies. They now have Virgin Galactic that will serve the space tourism market, and they have a company called Virgin Orbit that will be delivering payloads into orbit. So that is very exciting as we go forward.
So some interesting partners you're working with. What a time for you. Pretty exciting, I would think, to be coming to work right now, Todd.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Well, keep us posted.
Certainly will. Thank you very much for having us.
He's Todd Lindner, director of the Cecil Spaceport, and watch that space. No pun intended. Thank you, Todd. Much more still ahead later. The new film celebrating the JU Dolphins' magical NCAA championship season that brought a divided city together. Don't miss it as we talk about it with basketball legend Artis Gilmore. But up next, the state of the GTM Reserve. That's today's Going Green. This is First Coast Connect. Back in a moment.
Desperately in love with a girl who was dead and with a man who was living but psychotic, and it was the happiest time of my life.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live. This week, sewing, singing, suits, and cemeteries. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Many people in Jacksonville never come in contact with those outside their core communities. WJCT is embarking on a journey called Beyond the Core to start a citywide conversation about what unites the people who call Duval County home and what makes our smaller communities unique. We might have an upcoming Beyond the Core listening event in your neighborhood. Check WJCTnews.org to find out.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. An incredible natural resource in our area, the GTM Research Reserve, is hosting an event next week called State of the Reserve, a chance to explore how coastal changes are impacting Northeast Florida, including the effects of recent hurricanes. Caitlin Dietz is the Coastal Training Program Coordinator and the coordinator for this event, and she told me more in today's Going Green. Caitlin, welcome. Tell me about State of the Reserve.
So State of the Reserve is hosted by the Coastal Training Program at the GTM Research Reserve, and it's an opportunity for our researchers and agency representatives, local elected officials, universities, and communities to come out and learn about all of the science and research that has been going on within the GTM Reserve's boundaries over the past year.
And this year's theme is the art of science in our community. This is cool because you're trying to educate the public about how the decisions all of us make, both as individuals and as communities, can affect our ecosystem, right?
Right. So it's a theme that came out of preparations for Hurricane Irma. And we thought, you know, there really needs to be a discussion and understanding of how the science is still being researched, and we're still trying to understand what's going on, while at the same time, we're trying to figure out how to make the best decisions for our coastal communities.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Irma, what was the, what were the worst effects? What will we be learning at this symposium?
So at the GTM, we were very fortunate. We have a very strong natural dune system, so that protected the GTM. However, I'm sure you've seen many of the numerous impacts. So the State of the Reserve will really focus on the mangrove migration over the past year, our oysters and water quality, how vegetation has changed from storm events, the new threats to some of our cultural resources, the changes in our dune systems, our educational programs, and how our citizen scientists are continuing to go collect data.
And the GTM Research Reserve is an incredible gem in this community. For people who aren't familiar with this parcel, can you explain a little bit about the natural wonders of this reserve and where you're located and how people can access this little piece of paradise?
Of course. So the GTM Research Reserve is a very unique partnership between a federal partner, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. We are one of 29 national estuarine research reserves around the entire country. And we are a very unique place where fresh water from the land mixes with salt water from the sea. And we're there really for long-term research, education, and coastal stewardship. Mm-hmm. We are located down in South Ponte Vedra at 505 Guana River Road. And to learn more information, you are welcome to visit our website, which is www.gtmnerr.org.
People probably still call it the Guana area, but the official name is the GTM Research Reserve.
That right. is correct.
Yeah. Just a beautiful area, incredible wildlife, incredible natural life. And so this event that's coming up is a way for people to learn a lot and actually participate in some dynamic interactive workshops, too. Correct?
Correct. In the morning, we are going to have a plenary presentation, and then that will be followed by two concurrent panel sessions where we'll have moderators lead some questions as far as the art of science in our community and how different decisions have been made. And then we'll also have an oral scientific symposium and a poster reception throughout the day.
You're even, I'm looking here at your agenda, even some sessions about oyster gardening, sharks. People are going to learn about sharks at the reserve?
Yes. We actually, at our oral presentations, Jim Gelschleiter from the University of North Florida will be there, and he will be sharing 8 years worth of shark research in the Talamato River.
Wow, interesting. And a reception in the evening as well. So a really special day. Why would you say that this area is so important to preserve and study for this community?
So we have almost 74,000 acres of land within the reserve's boundaries. And much of that is a natural ecosystem. So it's important to understand how our natural ecosystem is responding to storm events or development, and also just to understand how to better become a more resilient community for the future.
Mm-hmm. How can people be part of this really exciting and important event?
That's easy. You can just go onto our website, www.gtmnerr.org, and make sure to register on the homepage and show up the day of.
Caitlin Dietz, she's Coastal Training Program Coordinator and in charge of the 2018 State of the Reserve event. Caitlin, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And in a moment, sports legend Artis Gilmore and the new film Jacksonville Who? That's next.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Just because other people don't see it, doesn't mean it's not there. My Next Snap Judgment, from WNYC, The Path. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Saturdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
WJCT offers a 24-hour classical music service dedicated to live classical music programming 24 hours a day. To find out more, visit us at wjct.org/hd.
Welcome back. Well, some sports media called them the Mod Squad, but to the college basketball establishment, they were simply Jacksonville Who? Back in 1969, the JU Dolphins were playing for a small, unknown school in a relatively unknown city with a troubled racial history, Jacksonville. But then an incredible Cinderella season took the team from nowhere to the heart of March Madness. A new film, Jacksonville Who?, tells the incredible story of the 1969-70 JU Dolphins. Take a listen.
Into Gilmore, you got to deny him that ball if you can, because look what he can do.
I don't know if a Hollywood scriptwriter could have done a better job watching the ascension of artists from Jacksonville.
We played wide open basketball. We loved to run.
No shot clock, no three-point shot, and no dunking. We still average 100 points a game.
Stepping in, Artis Gilmore will jump against Sidney Wicks. The Cinderella team, the unknown, against the defending national champs UCLA. And the tip is over to Jacksonville. Morgan breaks and hits the opening basket.
Jacksonville University's basketball team became Jacksonville, Florida's team. And it was across racial bounds.
I think that the players did a lot for not just JU, but for the city, to see black men becoming famous in the city, because you got to remember, integration of schools here was in 1968.
When I saw Artis Gilmore, Pembroke Burroughs, Chip Doubling on the basketball team, that was, in effect, a chipping away at this society of segregation here in Jacksonville.
If you talk to people of that era, it jump-started the healing of race relations in this city and in this part of the region. And they came together over one thing, their love of the game and their love of these young men.
I would say that that team, that year, is so historic how it brought everybody together, not just JU, not just Jacksonville. It brought everybody in Florida. And as a matter of fact, I had never seen this before. And I thought, what a wonderful way to live.
Right now, we're pleased to welcome JU alum, Hall of Famer, and sports legend Artis Gilmore to Studio 5. Artis, so good to see you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Melissa.
Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you. And with us on the line from California, the film's producer, another JU alum, Frank Pace. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Melissa. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And I hear today's your birthday, too, by the way.
It is.
Wow.
It is.
Well, happy Valentine's Day
happy
and
birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Guys, this is such a neat project. Yeah. So, Artis, let's begin with you. Frank made this film about this unbelievable season as the JU Dolphins go all the way to face defending champion UCLA in the title game, which was exciting enough. But at the same time, it brought this whole city together, a racially divided city. It was a magical time for Jacksonville.
No question, Melissa. It was just a phenomenal time in this city to be here and certainly to be aware and a part of some of the festivities that was taking place over at on Jacksonville University in the campus. And certainly something unique that was able to galvanize and bring about somewhat of a unity in a racial segregated town and city and the community during that time frame.
Frank Pace, you're a successful Hollywood producer. In fact, you're about to start work on the new Murphy Brown show, which is exciting. This must have been a labor of love project for you to make Jacksonville Who as a JU alum, because what a story it is. It's a great story.
Well, ironically, when my partner, Steve Brodeur, who also went to Jacksonville University, came to me with the idea, I didn't really buy into it because I didn't want to do just a basketball story. I said we'll have to expand the story, and we expanded it to include the racial aspects of it, and that's really what made the movie.
Right, and tell me a little bit more about what people will see, because this is airing on NBA television this month, correct?
Correct. February 20th at 8 o'clock Eastern, and then it'll be repeated at 11:30 p.m. Eastern, which is better for us on the West Coast because that'll be 8:30.
So people will learn about what was going on in the city at that time, right as the 60s gave way to the 70s, which was an unsettled time.
Yes, it was really unsettled, both politically and racially. And we had a unique, you know, at that time, there was only one black player in the entire SEC. The schools in Jacksonville were desegregated in 1968. People don't realize that. And, you know, the people that have seen it remark about how much history they forgot, either A, forgot, or B, didn't know because they weren't born yet. And I think that's the special thing about this film, is that we remind the younger generation what people and players like Artis had to go through.
Yeah, it's so important for younger people to realize how difficult it was. You know, officially the schools were desegregated in the 50s, but as a practical matter, particularly in a lot of southern states, that didn't even happen until the dawn of the 1970s. And so, Artis Gilmore, for you and some of your teammates, as this season proceeded and you just kept winning and winning, what was it like for you as you were playing on the campus during that time and the city started rallying around you? But at the same time, as Frank pointed out, equality was really, you know, nowhere in sight in terms of students being represented on campus, in terms of political, economic equality. Segregation had literally just happened only the year before.
Well, it was certainly different. And I reflect early on my years growing up as a youth in the state of Florida, in a small city in Chipley, Florida. But the moving forward, fast forward, and thinking about the time frame that we were enjoying the success over on the campus of Jacksonville University and building unity, and we were just a unique group of individuals and as a family. I mean, it was just there was no definitive break between whites and black on our campus. That environment was totally unique and special.
The campus environment was positive.
Absolutely. Our campus environment was very positive.
And so, Frank, though, you can't really necessarily say the same about the city as a whole. But as you talk about in the film, the city rallied around this team because it was so exciting to see these young athletes go all the way to the Final Four. And the smallest, is it correct, the smallest school ever at that point to reach the NCAA Finals?
No, to this point.
To this point?
Yes, no school has ever reached the NCAA Finals. And moving forward with the reality of college basketball the way it is today, no smallest school will ever reach the NCAA Finals again.
How? What was it like for you to do the research to kind of go outside the sports aspect of telling this story and kind of get into more of the history of Jacksonville in producing this film?
Yeah, that was very interesting to me because I'm from New York originally. So when I came down to Jacksonville in 1968, I hadn't seen, you know, colored bathrooms and colored water fountains and, you know, the signs of segregation that were still very apparent in Florida, especially going toward where Artis grew up in Chipley. I was amazed to see this outward signs of segregation still very, very prevalent. And I was surprised to find how Jacksonville was, you know, at the heart of it in the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and even 60s. The Axe Handle incident was an eye-opening experience for me to see that something like that could happen as so late as the 60s. And we were very blessed to be able to have President Nat Glover recount a firsthand experience as a member of as a victim of the Axe Handle incident.
You've interviewed a lot of folks for this film, Nat Glover, JU President Tim Kost, former President Fran Kinney, just celebrated her 100th birthday. And as you said, Frank, this will air February 20th on NBA television. And there will be a screening, I believe, the same night on the JU campus and possibly a screening later this spring at the Ritz Theater. By the way, I'm getting tweets from listeners, artists. The LA Times wrote a piece a few years ago that said that game was rigged. But we'll have to leave that discussion for another day.
Absolutely, yes.
Artis Gilmore, sports legend on the show, congrats on the new film. A lot of people, I hope, will see Jacksonville Who. It's jacksonvillewho.com to check out the website. Producer Frank Pace is on the line from L.A. Frank, so good to talk to you. Thanks for sharing this with our listeners. What a great project, and what a window into the city's past as well.
You bet, Melissa. And just in closing, I would really like to thank Peter Galone and the benefactors for funding this film and Tim Kost for all of JU's cooperation.
Absolutely. Again, that's February 20th on NBA television. Catch it then. And we'll be right back.
If the news is getting you down, perhaps you're not seeing the bigger picture.
If we try to understand how the world works and make people better off, bit by bit we can succeed.
Psychologist Steven Pinker argues that by most metrics, our world is healthier and less violent than it was. He makes his case for reason, science, humanism, and progress. Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, long-haul trucker Finn Murphy. He's logged over 1 million miles hauling people's belongings across the country. From up in his truck cab, he can see what's happening in the cars below.
The behavior that people perform inside their vehicles makes it look like they don't think anybody can see. Well, I can see everything.
Murphy has a new memoir. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
150 million women in the Muslim world working is a whole lot of economic impact.
The combined earnings of these 155 million women, it's $1 trillion. So it makes them approximately the 16th largest economy in the world if we were comparing them to economies.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Opportunities and barriers for women in the Muslim world, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, vocalist Cecile McLaurin-Sauvant and pianist Sullivan Fortner live in concert at Jazz and Lincoln Center and in conversation in Harlem. The intimacy of two of the most charming new voices in jazz. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
I know you inside out. You ain't.
Welcome back. Well, to public radio fans, she's a familiar voice on our popular show. Wait, don't tell me. Comedian Paula Poundstone is also loved for her live one-woman shows, and she's bringing it to the Florida Theater this Friday. Take a listen.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm the luckiest person in the entire world. I get to do Wait, Don't Tell Me, where, you know, I'm one of the three panelists answering questions about the week's news and then saying anything we want. And then I get to separately tour telling my little jokes in theaters, and it's so uplifting and so much fun to be out with a group of people laughing for the night.
That's Paula Poundstone this Friday at the Florida Theater. Get your tickets now. Finally this hour, coming up this weekend, local students will get the chance to brush up on their oratorical skills in a contest named after one of the greatest orators of all time. The Upsilon Lambda chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity is presenting its 10th annual MLK Oratorical Contest Saturday at Westside High School. Here with more, Chapter President James Kelly. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Ross. Thank you for having us this morning.
It's so good to see you. And this is exciting because not only do the kids get good at public speaking, they can win some scholarship money too, right?
Absolutely. This year, we're giving away a total of $3,000, $1,500 to the first place winner. And there'll also be a second, third, and fourth place winners as well.
This is your 10th annual MLK Oratorical Contest. It's Black History Month. It's at Westside High School, which is symbolic. Of course, the city went through this whole ordeal over changing the name of that school from the former founder of the Ku Klux Klan, Nathan Bedford Forrest, finally got rid of that offensive name. It's now Westside High.
Yes.
So what's going to be happening at this event?
Well, this event, what you come out and be and expect to see, we have seven young men that will be competing this year. And those young men will come out and demonstrate oratorical skills. They'll come out and discuss a particular topic. This year, the topic is going to be, where do we go from here, chaos or community, 50 years after the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? You know, this year is the 50th anniversary of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So come out and they'll be able to experience these young men. We'll also have some other entertainment that will be going on, but it's going to be a very enjoyable event.
So you want the public to come and cheer these young men on. It's sort of entertaining, too. It's not only a scholarship and an academic exercise, it's fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. Be able to come out and hopefully some of the other students that will come will be able to experience and take away from some of the skills that we've been able to train and go through some sessions with these young men. And it'll be a lot of fun and a big takeaway. So it's a scholarship money at work.
How much prep have they put into this? And how long do they have to speak?
Wow. So the minimum of 4 minutes, not to exceed 7 minutes. And they have been preparing for this for several months. We've had various sessions with them to talk to them and teach them about the oratorical skills, body language, how to demonstrate. And also they were expected to write an essay to prepare for this. So a lot of work has gone into this.
Can they use notes or do they have to have it memorized?
Both. So both in the competition, the judges, you know, they really like those who can speak without looking at the paper and
sure. memorize. That's important.
It is, yes.
So this is, again, this is Saturday. This is at Westside High. Tickets are what, $5?
Tickets are $5 for students, $15 for adults. And you can purchase tickets via Eventbrite. Just go out on Eventbrite and search for MLK Oratorical Competition. Again, via Eventbrite, MLK Oratorical Competition. You can also purchase tickets on site. So I tell you, if anyone wants to really come out and enjoy a fun-filled event this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., there will also be refreshments served following the event as well.
Everybody just shows up in this town. You know, it's yes. so funny to me. Like, everybody comes on this show and they say, go to my Eventbrite, register,
right.
buy the
yes.
ticket. And then everybody just kind of shows up.
Yes.
Why is that, Jacksonville? This is a walk-up city. People don't like to get in the habit of reserving their tickets, but do James a solid here and reserve your ticket in advance.
Absolutely.
If you can.
We try to make it available for those who are very technology savvy and get those tickets early. And hey, today is Valentine's Day, so
yes.
it'll be a great gift for someone that you think a lot of, or that student or teacher that you want to get a gift for. So it will be $15 well spent and $5 for students.
If you forgot to buy someone a Valentine's Day gift, it's not too late. This is one idea.
Yes,
he's James Kelly, chapter president, as Alpha Phi Alpha presents its 10th annual MLK Oratorical Contest Saturday morning at Westside High School. James, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. If you missed anything, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. And next on 1A, how much are drug makers to blame for the opioid crisis? I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.